You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 67 of Take a Bow. I'm your host, Eli Tokash, and we have a very different but exciting episode this week as well. Not too different, actually. I mean, we have one interview today, not 10 like last week. But the interview is definitely different as far as we talk more about one topic for the full 40 minutes because there was just so much to unleash. And I think it's really good and a really thought-provoking episode for sure. And this episode is going to be featuring Eric Anthony Lopez, who was literally starring in one of only two theater productions in the entire world over the course of the pandemic. So Eric's experience over the past 2 years working in the theater is something that not a lot of people can say and not a lot of people can talk on. And to have him on to talk about that experience and talk about what the day-to-day life was extremely interesting. And there was just so much to talk about. I mean, everything, I feel like every time he would say something new, like I just genuinely wanted to hear and learn about. He just, like I said, it was very thought-provoking. Everything he was kind of saying, I was like, oh, well, I have a follow-up question to that. And this makes me think of another question. So very, very cool episode this week. And I feel like you're all going to enjoy it because it was at the peak of a pandemic. You know, literally only 30 people can say he's experienced what he experienced. And he was in that cast. And just the stories that he was telling, it's very good. It's very good. So stay tuned. We have a very exciting episode, coming to you very shortly. But first we got to talk about some Broadway news. Come on. There's a lot going on, so I can't cover everything, as always, but I want to start out this segment by saying happy opening to Hadestown and Waitress, two of my literal favorite Broadway shows, okay? Hadestown, just obsessed. Reeve Carney is unhuman, and he's so good, but so unique. And of course, Waitress. You all know how I feel about Waitress. I'm so excited for that to be returning. So yes, that, and it's happening today. Like, what are the odds that shows open on a Thursday when Take a Bow releases a new episode? Like, first of all, Thursday is like middle of the week, so why is anyone opening on a Thursday? But that's their choice. Like, I'm happy about it because it works out perfectly for me, and I'm the sooner the better. I'm just so excited. So yes, huge happy opening to Hadestown and Waitress, and that also leads me to saying happy early closing to Springsteen on Broadway, which closes this Sunday. It seems like Springsteen, I don't know, it was a very interesting run for him. I know it was limited, but it seemed like it went in and out. I don't know. I didn't pay too close of attention as I should have. But yes, thanks for coming back to Broadway. Thanks for opening Broadway and just being a good light and good presence that we all needed during this time when all the other shows were trying to get under their feet. So, happy closing to Springsteen on Broadway and happy opening to Hadestown and Waitress. So exciting. It's been a crazy week. A bit of controversy, of course. This time not surrounding the whole vaccine and anti-vaxxers. This was more surrounding the transgender community. Monday, September 6th, location TBA, there will be a trans march, which we will keep you all posted on the location when it's announced, and we'll be posting it on the Take a Bow Instagram. You can follow my Instagram, and I'll be posting it there when we do have a location. Right now, we don't have a location, so I can't tell you guys where to go, but there will be a trans march, and this march comes in light of the recent statements that Cameron McIntosh released saying you can't implant something that is not inherently there in the story or character. That's what I think. Just to do that, that becomes gimmick casting. It's trying to force something that isn't natural. And that just was not, that was not okay. I don't mean to be political, but I really, I don't really think it matters what view, what your political views are, but I just, I think that everyone can agree that that may not have been the nicest statement or a fair statement at all. I just think, I don't know, understand how someone in the theater community can actually think like that. But either way, trans folks in the theater decided to spark a conversation led by them on the topic, and many trans performers kind of took to social media, and of course they're leading this march, saying that, you know, we are actors, we're not a gimmick, we are people just like you. And so there's been a lot of interesting conversations that have come out of it. So I try to look at things in a positive way, and I do appreciate these conversations that have sparked and kind of come to surface with a lot of people. And I think it's important that we do have these conversations, especially led by trans people, which kind of hasn't really happened as much as it should in the past. But that being said, yes, I just wanted to report that there's a trans march. So let's go support trans performers. And I will keep you all posted on the location of that through social media, through Instagram. I can post it. Just reach out to me if you're interested, and I'll send it over to you. The trans march will also, like I said, we'll be having conversations. We will be marching along Broadway. There will also be transgender performers there, and they'll be singing or, like I said, sparking conversation. So I hope to see you all there. This is pivotal that we support this. I do not stand with his comments, and I do not stand for his comments or anything, and I will fully be supporting all the trans performers on Monday and of course beyond, you know. So I hope you all will join me and the Broadway community in supporting them and supporting everyone else. So there is actually a cool announcement that came out this week. Generally they don't always do this, but MJ the Musical is literally accepting video submissions nationwide as they are looking for a new young Michael Jackson. So performers, okay, so in the show, they say Michael Jackson's around 10 years old. And performers, the anyone can audition, can be older or younger, as long as their voice is still in the young Michael Jackson range. So if you're interested, all you have to do is make a video of yourself singing a Michael Jackson song. And then if you don't know a Michael Jackson song, just look it up. I highly recommend just trying this. It's going to be really cool, and it's a really cool opportunity, especially if you get it. You're going to be on Broadway. So in this video, all you have to do is tell them your name, your age, your height, where you're from, how you heard about this opportunity, and of course, sing your Michael Jackson song. So you don't even have to learn lines or anything. So if you already know a Michael Jackson song, you really don't even have to prepare it. So if you already know a Michael Jackson song, you don't even really have to prepare anything. It's just a really cool opportunity that allows you to audition for a Broadway musical. It's MJ the Musical. And if you are interested in doing that, you have to obviously film the video and then email a link to the video at audition@mjthemusical.com. Once again, audition at mjthemusical.com. And those auditions need to be submitted by September 20th. So if anyone is seriously interested in auditioning for a Broadway show and you're able to sing Michael Jackson, please, please, please submit it. I think it's such a cool opportunity. It's going to be one that you don't want to pass up. They're literally just like looking for anyone and everyone to submit videos for to play young Michael Jackson on Broadway. So take advantage of the opportunity. That wraps up the news segment today. I know there wasn't much. I covered a couple topics, but they were some heavy topics and meaty topics that took up a lot of time. So those are some of the major ones that I really wanted to touch. And with that being said, I am so excited for this interview. So we're going to turn it over to the interview, okay? And our guest this week, like I said earlier, is Eric Anthony Lopez. And you all actually heard from him last week, if you listened to last week's episode. He was one of the guests that I actually interviewed. I know, unfortunately, for me at least, I don't know about y'all, maybe you guys like that length, but for me, those were just too short. And I couldn't ask them everything that I wanted to. And Eric's story with being in Phantom, and he's been an American Idol. He's done opera all over the place. He's done so many things. And you know, I just feel like we're gonna see him on Broadway soon enough. So he is yet to make his Broadway debut, and he kind of shares some of his like dream Broadway debuts, and we'll keep our fingers crossed that one of those happen, but I just feel like we don't even have to keep our fingers crossed, because I feel like he's just going to be on Broadway because he's just so talented, and he has so much experience, and he was in the international tour of Phantom of the Opera. So without further ado, I'm just going to stop talking about Eric Anthony Lopez, and you're going to hear from him. So Eric Anthony Lopez, curtain up. This week, we have a very special guest who is known internationally, as he was seen most recently in the international tour of Phantom of the Opera, which was one of only two productions going on throughout this whole pandemic. And that in that production, he actually made history by becoming the youngest performer to play
Ubaldo Piangi. But that I covered it. So the whole thing is, so I guess the actor cast to sing the role of Ubaldo Piangi with his normal, How do they say it? With his normal track, I guess, being Passerino 8 times a week. That's a mouthful.
My God, that's too much. But that is just as much as impressive. I mean, you made history in perhaps one of the most iconic franchises on Broadway in the Phantom world. So everyone, welcome. You just heard from him to take a bow, Eric Anthony Lopez.
Oh, wait, this is a part of the prize?
That was part of the intro, but that's okay.
We can leave it. Okay, so let's explain to the viewers. So yes. I cover the role of Piangi. He's 35. I don't look 35. So what they do is, you know, I'm covering it as someone does.
Right.
But I play Passerino in the show, and I cover Piangi. So, you know, it's a joke between me and the Carlottas, who I play opposite, as I could be their son because I look, you know.
So wait, 10. So when you like, so say you like go on to sing for Ubaldo Piangi, you play Passerino and you do double duty basically?
No, I do not do double duty. I would then be taken out of Passerino and told as
I was going to say that's a lot.
Piangi. No, they wouldn't have me do both. But it's cool because at the time I was cast in 2018, I was 23, which is bizarre. Because at the time I was like, oh, I could do this part. And then you sit with the book and go, oh, wow, I'm like a decade off, but it's fine. It's good.
Right. I mean, you have, your voice is just so so beautiful. I mean, I don't really know how to say it. I mean, you have this operatic background that is so beautiful, and you can sing insanely high. I mean, your voice is just incredible. So yes, it makes sense that you could literally, like, you could play him. And do you have this, do you have an, is your background mostly in opera?
Yes, I've done a couple of operas in Sydney and at the Opera House and in London. Mm-hmm. I always leaned towards an operatic kind of feel.
Right.
So pre-Phantom, to try to beef up my opera resume, I would do, try to get that. Yeah, I would go to London and Sydney to try to do that, which was a pretty sweet gig.
Yeah.
I knew I, it sounds kind of weird, but I always knew that Phantom would be kind of my first commercial show that I ever did.
Really?
So I knew, I was like, they're probably going to put me, cause I got called back many times, but you know, as now that I know from being casted, I was too young for the track that I could do. So by the time I auditioned for the World Tour Company and for Broadway, frankly, they were, you know, I had all that international opera experience. So they felt more comfortable not just giving it to, oh, a 23-year-old, but, oh, giving it to someone who actually, you know, has, you know, had an international experience and operatic experience.
Sure.
Because one of the requirements for Piangi to sing it is to be opera trained. And I'm not formally opera trained. I can just fake it well.
Wow.
But being in, you know, in choruses, if you will, of certain operas and things helped me out by the time I came to the show. So,
oh my gosh, that's incredible. Well, for those listening, so I actually, last week I released the wonderful red carpet interviews that we had at the show Must Go On premiere. And you heard from Eric actually in those, in that episode. So now we're hearing from him again, and we're going to hear more about his story and more in depth into what it was like to be in a show during a pandemic. So Eric, what was that like for you? Take us through a day in the life, like as far as the tests and everything that went around the whole COVID scenario.
Yeah, a life of the pandemic, a life doing a show during a pandemic. So yeah. It was crazy in the beginning. We had masks. That was, for starters, we had masks backstage at all times. So, and temperature checks before we got in the building. So that's cast, that's crew, that's everybody. You didn't get in the door unless your temperature was recorded. And then if it wasn't too high or whatever, you would then be sent to a nurse from one of the local presenters who would check you out and see if you're exhibiting any COVID symptoms. And that actually never really happened. No one ever stepped foot in the building and felt unwell. If you were unwell, you were out of the show. Like, there was no shame
right
in that. And then they had track and trace. So what we would do every day, and it got kind of crazy after a while, is anywhere you went, they wanted to know, local presenters wanted to know. So we would fill out at 2 o'clock today before the show, I went to so-and-so restaurant. And by doing that, tracking 135 or so, you know, slips,
yeah,
they were able to say, hey, based on these slips, you people may need to get tested because there was a little bit of an outbreak. So we would get emails. If you were here at that time, we have the slips. We know where you are.
Right.
These, you might need to get tested. And people were more than, that's the thing that, so it was a worldwide cast. So people from the West End, people from New York, from people from South Africa, all over. Everyone was very willing to, you know, comply. Like, there was no, it was actually kind of amazing. There was no like funny business. Everyone kind of just, you know, knew what we had to do.
Right.
We knew we wanted to keep our jobs. And a lot of eyes were on us. Mm. Not only the Korean government, but the whole, that sounds kind of silly, but the whole world in terms of theater, like they were looking at live events. Everyone was kind of seeing how we were actually doing this. So
right.
I remember I would get I've actually never said this before. I would get DMs from certain outlets saying, do you guys really wear masks backstage? And I'll give you this amount of money if you say, you know, like, it was weird.
Oh,
like, we
wow.
had press. We had like press around our show. Like, they were trying to see if there was any funny business going on.
Right.
And it was, and so, yeah, it was a crazy experience. And we all kind of lived in fear that we were going to shut down every day or someone yeah. was going to get sick. So a day in a life. Yeah, we would just wear masks backstage. And then when it was time to go on stage, we would put our mask on a table, okay. sing, dance, do what we had to do. And then go right
yeah.
back and put our masks on and socially distant. Because, you know, there is no such thing as socially distancing on a stage. That did
right.
really...
So how did that work in like a dressing room? Like, did you all have your own?
We didn't have our own, but we all spread out.
Okay.
But still, like, of course, with our masks on, you know, people yeah. get relaxed 6 or 7 months into the COVID way of doing things. So people mm-hmm. would like talk. And now we would still have our masks on, but it was like, you couldn't really socially distance. So we had hand sanitizer everywhere.
Yeah.
These costumes, which have been used, and it's no shade to Phantom, it's just how it is, since 1988, like,
right.
these costumes have been recycled from company to company to company to London to Broadway to Los Angeles back in the 90s. Like, these costumes are old. They have never been cleaner and more well prepped and kept and sanitized
oh.
than it was for this, because people, you know, it was wild.
Yeah.
It was...
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
Yeah.
That's insane. Was there ever like, okay, so you mentioned that like your cast was literally all over the world. Like, when you got the call and they were telling you that you got the role to be in Phantom, the international tour, while there's a pandemic going on, were you like, was there a worry? Was there like a doubt when you were like, is this like something that I should do at this moment in time?
Well, actually, that was more of Cats, actually.
Okay.
We had like two people put in right before the pandemic. I was already with the show for 2 years at that point.
Oh, wow.
So I was already there doing the show that I knew. Like, there was no change in kind of what I was doing.
Gotcha.
So there was people who joined, like a couple of our Christine Alternate, Caitlin Finney, she joined right before the pandemic. Am I right about that? Yeah, right before the pandemic. And another guy, Aiden, mm-hmm. one of our Phantom covers, he joined. But other than that, we didn't have any crazy turnover. And if we did, it happened in February. And of course, we're hearing, you know, rumbles about COVID. But we thought it was just going to affect us, because we were now not in Tel Aviv and Dubai anymore. We were now in, you know, the Asian market. So
right.
we thought, oh, we're probably going to be canceled or delayed. So that's another thing. I heard about the first time I heard the word COVID or coronavirus, SARS, you know, that official first name, was like in December, January. And
really?
We were worrying about it. I remember telling my mom like in January, mid-January, I said, well, you know, I don't know, I might come home soon so we can get together or something. She goes, what do you mean? I was, oh, this is a virus going around. Oh, okay. Uh-oh. And it was like not even realizing, you know, it was a wild experience. To answer your question, I was already touring and doing the show.
Gotcha.
But it was, and our put, you know, people were put in a month before. So by the time everything went and we started wearing masks and all the rest of it, everyone was already put in. Like we already had a show that was locked with people, and, you know, there was nobody taking vacations during those 6 months. I'll tell you that. Everyone kind of stayed put.
Right, right. I'm sure that did, like, was that like scheduled? Was that something that like had to like, did that like affect anybody? Like, it was someone supposed to leave and they like couldn't, like, was someone supposed to join and they couldn't, like was, what was, if any, what was like major effects that, you know, doing theater during a pandemic had on the cast?
It was just, and I don't think I'm out of school for saying this, I think mentally we all kind of put, as our resident director said, Reiner, we kind of put the show first. Mm. But of course there was a mental anguish, if you will. You just, because everyone was paranoid,
right,
the entire time. I know for me, I was, you know, you're reading all these things about, you know, your city that you just left, you know, on a layoff, you know, New York for me. You know, they're trying to get ventilators and this, that, and the other, and people are dying. And then we're going on stage and singing and dancing. We kind of felt kind of like, well, what are we doing? Like, what? Why am I doing this?
Right.
But the Korean, you know, people were already kind of over their peak. Their peak was
okay.
A month and a half before. But in terms of people coming in, no. As I said, like we had, with full creatives and everything, come over and put new people in, not knowing that when March hit, we would be changing kind of how we were doing things.
Right. So talk to me about this. So March hits, right? And you have to change all these things. And now COVID and the pandemic is like really in the heat, in the heat of it, I guess. That's what I wanted to say originally. So that's what I'm going to say. And so, especially at least in the US, that's when things were kind of at its peak. Every night there must have been like is this going to be our last show? Or like what was happening? Like, I just need to hear all the thought process and everything.
It was crazy. So when March, and, you know, we're doing the mask and all the rest of it. And we just never, and it sounds like a corny line, and I'm sure it made the movie, but it's so true. We felt like every performance was genuinely our last.
Right.
Everyone was going all out, you know, every time.
Yeah.
No, it was just everyone really put their all into every performance, which sounds wild, but it was true, because people were just, we never knew when we were going to shut down, what was going to happen.
Right. So talk to me about like your first performance, right? And you look out into the audience and you just see 2,000 plus masks on people's face. What was that kind of, did that kind of just remind you of like, holy cow, this is insane, and like, I can't believe that I actually like am able to be doing this at this moment in time?
Yeah, but see, even still, in hindsight, you don't think like that. I know a couple of us turned to each other and were like, it was actually spooky at first. You look out and you're used to seeing a sea of darkness, and now you see a bunch of white masks popping up, and you're like, what the heck?
Right.
It was a little spooky at first, but honestly, and it 2 months in, maybe, we kind of got really used to it. It was an ever-present reminder that we were going through a pandemic. But it was also like, wow, like we kind of got used to it. So by the time, you know, that event that we performed with Josh Groban and Sierra and Andrea DeBus and all those people, you know, someone asked me at stage door, which I thought was kind of funny, was it weird performing for everyone with masks again. Like, you look out and there's a sea of masks. It's like, no, I said no.
Right.
Because it, I'm like, I'm so used to it now.
Right.
That it was like, oh, yep, this is what you do. It actually will be weird performing for a crowd that's not masked.
Right. That's exactly what I say now, is like, even like going into a grocery store, like, I still can't take my mask off, even though I see people doing it, because I just feel like it's like not even what you're supposed to do anymore. Like, life is normal now with a mask, and it's just bizarre. Talk to me. So in the documentary, I mean, we kind of got a little taste of it. One of your cast members had come down with COVID. Like, did that just add more stress, I guess, for you as a cast member dealing, like, maybe around him and whatnot? Like, what was going on, and how did you, were there added protocol? Like, what happened when, if someone was tested positive?
Yeah. So that was a crazy one. We had, so first it started with one of our ballet women.
Mm-hmm.
She was out of the show. Fine. Like, we were like, it was still like, I think it was March, right? No, April. We were like, oh, she's out. We didn't think anything of it, even still. and then we got an email. Hey, this person is now, you know, COVID positive, and we're like, oh damn. So right. We thought, when we all got tested and we got brought up to the roof of the hotel with hazmat suits and all the rest of it, we all thought, wow, we're gonna get, the show's over, and we're gonna now have a shit ton, yeah, that's what I said, a shit ton of cases. Like, we're gonna have about 10 or 15 of us, and I dance with her in masquerade. I'm not on the stairs, I'm actually, they'd have me double as a, in this thing called Little Band.
Oh my God.
So we have a dancing sequence. So I dance right in front of her. We interact. We're always, and she was one of my friends in the show.
Mm-hmm.
So I was convinced I had it. Everyone was panicking and texting on group chats. Like, oh my God. Like, it was wild. So then only one person contracted it, or maybe brought, we still don't know if, the person who additionally got COVID in our cast got it from the ballet woman,
mm-hmm.
or if, you know, like, we still don't know actually what happened, or if they both brought it from New York to.
Right.
But that, the guy who got COVID in our show, like, I sit next to him and I dance with him in that number, Masquerade 2. So I thought I had it too.
Oh my God.
And I didn't get it. And I honestly, well, I don't know. I don't want to spread science rumors, but I, you know what? I'm not going to say what I was going to say. There was rumors about why me. I was heavier at the time. So people say, oh, well, you're heavier, so you don't get COVID. Now, that is something that sounds about right in April 2020. We now know that that's not the case.
Yeah.
But again, this is the stuff we were hearing, you know, especially in the very beginning. There was all sorts of things. Oh, people under 20 don't get it. People under 30, like, you know how all that crap was going on.
We're still learning every day.
Everything is still ever changing,
right?
But yeah, it was crazy, and we were like, wow, I hope they're okay.
Right. And like, that's insane.
Like okay, we have understudies on, but like, are they okay?
Right. I know, like, was there ever like a thought of like shutting down the show right then and there, like, not shutting it down, but maybe taking a couple days off?
We ended up taking a 2-week, because we had to, we were all quarantined for 2.5 weeks. I'll say the Korean government treated us like gold. They like, they, and every, their whole people, their entire country, like, they were, they gave us a huge box of stuff.
Oh my God.
Like, we were in quarantine. We got a box of like food, but like legitimate, like household, like salmon and like milk and water, bottles and bottles and bottles of water in quarantine. Like, it was actually wild. Like, and I'm like, I wish our government would do that.
Right.
But actually, the big worry for me, not for me, but amongst everybody, without naming names, one of our girls, another veteran of the franchise, her mother passed away, not because of COVID. Couldn't go home because of COVID, and she had to just, and she was, and she, I think she took I don't even know. She took maybe a couple days off and came back. I was like, how are you even standing here right now? So it's all that stuff that, you know, that, you know, it's not just COVID, you know, real life. And no one could move.
Right.
Because we were in this like bubble. Wow. But thankfully none of the elders of our show got it. And everyone came out alive. And I'm not even saying that as a joke. We all.
No, literally.
But yeah, it's those things I think about that actually, when I talk about it with you, I remember it. I'm like, oh yeah, her mother passed away and she couldn't say goodbye.
Right.
That's horrible. And you hear those stories, you know, on the news of people saying goodbye on Zoom. That's kind of what she had to do. Wow. And then she had to go do her show and act like
everything was
fine.
And right. It's like, so. Wow. That's incredible. Wow. Well, kind of what you were referring to, we talked a little bit before we started hitting record on this. We had talked about what it was like to be at a premiere again and whatnot, and like be at a theater. Like now that you are out of you're kind of like home in New York and you've had some time away from Phantom and whatnot, and you're able to look back on all of these memories, like you just said, kind of like relive it in a way. How can you put into words like how I guess lucky and like grateful you've been to like be able to be one of the few actors or performers that have been able to work in the past couple of years and be in a theater where you love, you know, and do what you love?
Yeah, all the things you said, extremely grateful, extremely grateful to the Korean government, our producers, really useful, and our team for not only keeping our show running, but doing it in a safe fashion.
Yeah.
It's also talking to other actors now being back. Because the world tour is on a little hiatus at the moment.
Right.
But we're coming back at the end of the year, which is really cool. But in terms of, I was always kind of planning, not to leave, but I was always going to be kind of around in New York because I was doing a show in LA and what have you.
Oh.
And it really makes you, well, a TV show. I was shooting a TV
right.
show. And why, two things, you know, coming out of that bubble from Korea and Phantom and going to another show, they do it exactly kind of like everyone wants to keep their sets, their places safe. Mm-hmm. But no one does it like the Korean government, I must say, or the Koreans, because I think they're used to it and they take things a lot more seriously. Like,
right.
There is no fighting of the masks. Like people just put it on. There is no, well, I'm not going to, or politicizing of it. They just kind of do it.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to now go to, you know, post being on a COVID set, if you will. COVID set, but a post COVID set, if you will. And everyone, you know, the protocols are very similar. Like I've lived with them before. So it's kind of eerie.
Yeah.
But back to the original point. It's just grateful to keep working. And oh, and also talking to actors in New York, I can't actually relate. That's the weird. And it sounds like, oh, I really can't relate.
Yeah.
I never really experienced any of this. Like my lockdown was in Korea. I never had the normal experience of all the people I know from other shows. So it's grateful, but it's also like they talk about like real life stuff, like financial situations or people just leaving the business completely. I can't really empathize. Like I can empathize, but you know what I mean? I can't really like, I hear you. No,
yeah,
I don't.
Totally.
And that's the only downside, is that you can't really be a good friend. You're just
There's nothing wrong with that. Okay. You got to do what you love and do what the other like 7,000 people in the industry or whatever it is like wanted to do, you know, like, you know, I don't know. I just think it's a really cool thing to like,
it is cool. And not to be a downer.
Yeah. Like
it is also just, it still doesn't believe, and this sounds really corny, because I lived it, I still don't believe like we were the only show in the world.
Right.
That's the weird part.
Yeah. So you guys literally, I mean, you made history in the show for so many reasons. I mean, like, you were just, to say that you were part of that cast, the youngest person to sing. It's just like, it's so cool. I don't know. I find it very interesting. I don't know. You should be very proud. Everything going on. Yes, but I do want to talk to you too about, like we mentioned, the Show Must Go On documentary and the premiere of that. I not so much about the documentary itself, but kind of what it was like to have a camera following you around, and how did that affect things backstage or whatever it may be, and just like documenting your entire, well, some of your run.
So no, having a camera following us, that was, a lot of things. It was interesting. It felt, and our, you know, there was no crew. Like usually when you work on a film or a TV, there's a crew.
Right.
And Sammy kind of, there was like extremely skeleton crew. Our director, Sammy.
Yeah.
Connell, who directed Evita at City Center. Bunch of other things. She held the camera herself. She did the questions. She did the setup. Like she was carrying around that camera all around. Like you don't get that. Usually you have a whole crew. So that on the industry side was very interesting. Also, in terms of following us around and everything, we were so focused, and this is, I speak for a lot of people, I think, on this, on doing the show and staying healthy and honestly keeping the show going. You know, we weren't really thinking, like when they told us, oh, this documentary is coming, we were like, okay, whatever. Like we were like, okay, this is cool, but we got a job to do.
Right.
And now looking back on it, we're like, oh, that was really something. I'm glad that we kind of have a piece,
right,
this piece frozen in time. Because I keep repeating it, but it's worth repeating. I have no, until that documentary, I didn't really truly understand what we were doing at that particular time.
Well,
until I saw it.
Yeah, I mean, well, listen.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to, has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I know you were too busy being a star singing with Josh Groban and everything, but on the night of the premiere, I just wish that you guys were able to be in that audience, because I'm getting chills literally thinking about it, just because, like, after seeing you guys up on a giant screen in a theater, you know, like with everyone, with a full packed house, you know, like everyone was crying, everyone was smiling, everyone was feeling every emotion, and just the sense of a missing piece of the puzzle finally coming back to life and coming back into them. And it was just so incredible to just sit back and just look around the room at everyone who was enjoying this and enjoying the work that you guys were doing and enjoying the piece that the documentation of your production. It was just a magical night. And I just so wish that you were able to see everyone's like tears just coming down their faces of like joy and sadness and all of the hard times that they were reliving during COVID and everything. It was really special.
I'll tell you this. I definitely there's a crevice in the Majestic
on
stage left that I kind of peeked out of.
Really?
And I saw, because also the screen is so bright, I could see people's reaction, and it was comforting. And then in dress rehearsal, I knew it would be not that I choreographed it. I did not do anything or have any part of that. But Sammy had the brilliant, and Kristen Lodgett, the musical supervisor at Phantom for World Tour and Broadway. They had this idea to sing after the show as if we never said goodbye, which I thought was a brilliant choice.
Really?
And what makes me, as a fan, you know, because I was a huge fan of Phantom before I was in it. It's funny, I have fans at Stage Door will sometimes come up to me and be like, you're like one of us because you're so enthusiastic with Phantom. I'm like, oh no, it's true. I wear the t-shirts, I wear the hats, I don't care.
Oh, I love that.
Like, and people, oh, well, that's not cool because, you know, people in the show, you don't want to be a fangirl. I'm like, no, I will rock it. I don't care.
Right.
I'm Masquerade and Phantom is my jam. No, we're doing the event, right? And we're sound checking it and whatever. They have the candelabras. So what I loved about that is the screen played the credits. The screen flies up and all you see is the candelabra. Oh my God. I'm getting choked up. And you see the candelabras lit for the first time. And then you see, of course, what better choice? Sierra Bagus standing right there center stage with the musical supervisor of that show playing, starting that song. I was backstage. It's, you know how like you do interviews and it sounds like it was just so magical, you know, it's kind of corny. It really was.
No, yeah.
Like, magical. Like everyone backstage, the crew, like it was just a teary, something about that scrim flying up and the candelabras being lit like that was crazy. And it makes you appreciate, my God. No, it makes you appreciate, you know, theater and the arts and all that. And such a beautiful piece for them to pick too.
So yeah.
It was wild. It was wild.
Totally. It really seems like, I mean, as unfortunate as a reset, like it was for a lot of people, in a lot of ways, you know, some people needed the reset to just look back and reflect on just the little things in life that they may take for granted and just realize, you know, I need to stop taking that for granted. Cause you don't like, I feel like once you see a Broadway show, like however many times and you continue to go and then you're like, oh, like it's not as special, but like, I remember walking into the theater again and just like, it was as if I relived the first time I ever saw a Broadway show, you know, like, and I was like, this is a feeling that I need to continue to feel. Like I can't like get tired of this feeling anymore. Cause I know what it's like to live without it, you know?
For sure. That's actually one of the things a lot of actors are feeling that way.
Yeah.
Like I know when I walked inside the Majestic again, where I had my fitting, gosh, how many years ago? In 2018 or whatever. It just felt like I never left, but it also felt like a renewed sense. And we also knew what we were going to do that evening for that welcome back, you know, Broadway first full house performance, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of thing. And also, you know, I know for me, especially during the on the road times of my career, you know, you come back to New York, I have in my apartment, whatever. And people are like, oh, do you want to see this show? And you're like, oh, okay, sure. But sometimes you don't want to go. You're like, yeah, I'm not going to that. I'll see it in 6 months or I'll see it
right
next time. I really don't want to. I'm kind of musical theatered out. Let me do something else. Because, you know, you're on your layoff.
Yeah.
I will never do that. I know I'll never do that again. There are so many shows that I actually, and not to shout it out, I'm not in it or, you know, a part of it, but for example, West Side Story, that revival, that was one of the things that I literally said, oh, I'll see that later. Oh, that won't go anywhere.
Oh, really?
West Side Story, people will go, I know I'm in town, but you know what? I'll catch it later because, yeah, I'll just catch it later. Now I'm kicking myself because everyone has such great things to say about it.
Right.
and now that's not coming back. So you're like, oh, okay. I'll try to, you know, that's definitely going into seeing things again.
Yeah.
Even being in a show.
Yeah,
there's literally. Be grateful, like, you know, there was a time where no one was working. Like, be grateful, be grateful, be grateful, be grateful. So.
But sure. you were doing it. You were booked and busy.
We were.
Right. As you should. That's incredible. Well, I do want to talk too, because there was something interesting. Okay. So obviously I like to prepare about my, prepare for my interviews and like kind of get some more information on guests and whatnot. But I had this, I came across your audition for American Idol that I just had to watch, okay? And I loved the fact that the song that you sang was called The Show Must Go On, mm-hmm. which was the title of the documentary. And just a full circle moment, plus you sang it in front of Queen, or Adam Lambert, who's now singing for Queen, and it was a Queen song. I thought it was all perfect. I just wanted to shout that out. I don't know if you want to talk about that.
I will. Yeah, no, it is so weird, and I try to ignore it. Also, a couple of things. So okay. I was a teenager when I went on that show.
Yes.
And I was definitely not ready. So that was the first thing I ever did, ever. So I literally, high school, a little bit of college, and then I did that. So no theater, before my theater life, you know. Before I moved to New York, before everything. Now,
wow,
that show being even that little snippet, which is like, I don't know, it's not necessarily my best work. However, that little event, Idol, like it opens so many doors and I'm very grateful to do it. Now, so how do I say? So for Show Must Go On, you know, people are seeing the movie and I'm involved with it and they're like, wait a second, isn't that the song I'm like, that is the song I sang.
I love that.
It makes me laugh because, you know, I'm like, I don't know. Did I predict? I don't know. It's very interesting.
Isn't
also, my email address as a little kid, which I don't have anymore, or AIM address. Remember AIM?
No.
Was like Idol or AOL, whatever the chat room. It was like Idol Wannabe.
Really? Now,
because I loved the show American Idol growing up.
Oh,
I was like, so it was just like a cutesy. So my thing was Idol Wannabe. And then like, you know, now I've done Idol.
Right.
Show Must Go On. Show Must Go On is about Phantom. Another thing that's weird, which I think I said to Richard Ridge at Broadway World on his interview on the carpet there. The person, I saw that show, Phantom, was my first Broadway show. Another foreshadowing. And it was, I think I was like 9 or 10. And my mom made it a point to say, oh, look, the conductor is a woman. Because she just wasn't used to seeing that. Because we're from like Long Island, like not the great area of Long Island. So like we don't see much, like we see like, you know, it's usually, you know, the stereotypical, it's a man in a suit who conducts.
Right.
So seeing a woman hold that space was, my mom, I just remember that. Oh yeah, that's the place with the woman conductor.
Wow.
Fast forward, 13 years, I got put in the show. By her, she's the reason I got that show, and you know, like she was the one who put together that event. Like now, she's like, I talk to her all the time, and she's and she notes the show when she came out towards her. Like it's just super crazy how that all works.
That's amazing. So, like,
while my little username was Idol Wannabe, I ended up doing Idol and doing Phantom, which is wild. So now I'm like thinking, should I look back at other things from my childhood?
I was just going to say,
wait a second. Ooh, I have one more thing that I don't often say.
Tell me.
Did a Vita in my high school. I know, because we had one girl belter who was mad good.
Period.
So we did a Vita, which was kind of crazy for a high school show. And I played Che Guevara. It's when I had like a pop voice. Now I could never, first of all, I shouldn't really play Che Guevara, but also I don't really have that pop. Well, I do, but no one hires me to do that anymore. They want me to do that. They don't want me to really rock out. Cut to, that was my first big like lead that I ever had in like my little town school district. It was an Andrew Lloyd Webber show. And now my first commercial show, if you look at everything, first big commercial show. And I did an off-Broadway show before that when I was 19, whatever. No, but my first big commercial show was an Angela Weber show. Oh my God. Is crazy how that all, you know.
I love it. I love it. We just went on like your whole life story of full circles in like 3 minutes. That was the most entertaining thing ever. So I do want to say, I'll ask the question and you let me know if you want to answer it. If not, that's okay. But I'm just very curious, just because you've accomplished so much in your career at such a young age, right? And, you know, Idol, you went to Hollywood, you did an international tour, you were off Broadway, like you said, you're doing so many things. You've performed at the Tonys, you've sung with Josh Groban. In 10 years, what is like your dream Broadway show that you want to be in?
So something where I could sing legit and maybe be a leading man. Because again, I look so freaking young that I would love to, like, you know, once I age up a little bit, I would love to play one leading man. Let's see. I would love to do Beast and Beauty and the Beast. I know that's coming to Broadway. I would love to do down the line Sweeney Todd.
Oh my God.
That's probably not 10 years.
As you should.
I would obviously love to play Phantom. That's another one that takes a little bit of time. I just want to be
down the pipeline. Playing Phantom.
Maybe. I would love to play it. I would love to play it. I look about 10, so maybe one day. But yeah.
Well, I mean, you're already in the Phantom franchise, so they know where to find you.
Yes, exactly. They don't even have to like call me. They can literally just summon me. They're like, right. Hey, come on down, you know.
Yeah. I love that. Oh my God. That's incredible. I love it's a very unique answer, the whole legit. You know, nowadays you don't really hear that, singing legit. I really love that answer. So it's interesting too, because like a lot of people are like, oh, something that's never written before. And obviously, like things that are written now aren't very legit. So very interesting answer. I really do enjoy that answer. And it's, I don't know, it's not my voice and it's not a dream role of mine, but I love that we have that variety now in on this podcast. Well, Anthony, thank you so much for doing this. This was a blast. I'm so happy that we got to talk about all things Phantom of the Opera and, of course, your story of Full Circles and American Idol and so many more. So thank you for doing this, and I appreciate it so much. And I'm so fortunate to, like, it's fun to do, like, do it in person and now do it, like, virtually. I don't know.
Yeah, for sure. That's the best thing about all this.
Yeah,
you can reach anybody now. So that's, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
I know. It's so bizarre. But yes, honestly, thank you so much. And I hope you enjoyed coming on. And I appreciate your time and willingness to do this. So good luck in all your future endeavors.
Why, thank you.
Oh my goodness, so excited. Okay, bye.
Bye.
Take a bow, Eric Anthony Lopez. Oh my goodness, there was just so much to unwrap here, okay? Everything that he was saying about what a day in the life was when you're like going through COVID during a pandemic while performing live theater was just insane. And the fact that, like, you know, he's now having experiences that no one can relate to because he's used to performing with people wearing masks and he's used to all of these protocols because he's lived it and he never had that full shutdown experience. I mean, he did, of course, because someone in the cast got COVID and he had to shut down for 2 weeks. But he had a 2 week shutdown, you know, like it wasn't like a year and a half shutdown like the rest of us experienced. And that's kind of what he was alluding to in the episode. And to be honest, I just found it all very fascinating. So Eric, thank you for joining us this week and telling us all about what it was like to perform live theater in the midst of a pandemic. And also sharing some really cool stories that you kind of alluded to that you never
told before. And, you know, just with people getting COVID, I mean, people's family members passing away and they weren't able to say goodbye. Some of the stories that he was just sharing with us kind of blew my mind, you know, and you kind of put it into perspective, because at first you're like, oh, you know, these people are so lucky, they've been able to have a job throughout all of this, you know, they weren't they didn't lose their jobs, and they weren't shut down for a year and a half and couldn't get that couldn't feed that crave that some of us were feeling with live theater or leaving our house or whatever, fill that void, I guess I should say, not feed that crave anyways. But yeah, so like you're kind of saying, wow, like that's so cool and he's so lucky. But then you put it into perspective of like what they had to go through on a day-to-day basis and just not being with their family in a scary time in the world and eventually losing some family and not being able to say goodbye. So like I said, Eric, thank you for coming on. Thank you for sharing your stories. I'm obsessed with all of these stories that you had shared. Those full circle moments were kind of amazing and really cool. So I'm very curious to see if he has any more of those moving forward. I'm sure he will. And before I let you all go this week, I want to talk a little bit about, I'm gonna throw it over to the Triple E segment, and that's Eli's Entertainment Experience. So welcome back to the Eli's Entertainment Experience. I know I've been bringing it back for the past couple episodes, but I do want to say, like, you know, with Eric, he's never been in a Broadway show, and, like, honestly, I understand why Broadway's as big as a deal as it is, but Broadway is live theater, you know, like you go to all of these, like when you hear Broadway and then you hear of regional theater, it's kind of like lessened, you know, and I'm at fault too, because like when I talk about certain things with guests on here, I usually talk about their resume on Broadway and not their regional theater resume. But where do you think all of the Broadway performers start out? And where do you think Broadway gets their talent from? It's from all of these regional theaters. And at the end of the day, like all these regional theaters have Broadway caliber performers, and they just don't have the budget, or they don't have the support to put on such crazy shows that Broadway is able to put on and kind of have that next level set or next level costumes or whatever it may be to make Broadway so special and spectacular. So it is big as a theater, you know, like it, all of those things go into play, but really Broadway is just a regional theater. And when I kind of learned, and that kind of came into perspective for me when I was nominated for a Jeff Award for my role in Trevor the Musical out in Chicago. And I was nominated for Best Actor in a Musical. And when I heard about this, I was like, oh, well, like, what is it? Like, I've never heard of the Jeff Awards. And they were like, oh, well, it's kind of the Tony Awards of Chicago. I was like, the Tony Awards of Chicago? That's crazy. Like, I feel like I would have heard of it. Like, and you know, like it's a huge deal. And then like, I'm there and I'm like, I get it. Like, you know, like I get it. 'Cause it's for theater in New York, the Tony Awards. That's for their regional theater. Broadway is their regional theater, you know, and they have Off-Broadway Awards and they have like all of these crazy things. But the Tony Awards are televised, you know, like there's just because of the money that Broadway and the community has up here in New York. So it's all very fascinating, and it's all very, you put it into perspective and you're like, wow, I've never really thought of it that way. And I just think that was something interesting that I kind of thought about when I was talking to Eric, because I was like, I can't believe he's done all of these incredible things and hasn't been on Broadway. But then I was like, wait a second, Broadway is just a regional theater for New York. So it's not like he just hasn't had his moment in New York yet, but he's had his moments elsewhere and he's done so many crazy successful things. So shame on me for, and I will be making sure that I do not just talk about Broadway moving forward. And I have done, like with guests, I've talked about the Muni and I've talked about the Fox Theater and I've talked about some of these famous theaters that are regional, but not all of them, you know? And I just think that it's something that we should all shed a light on and kind of think about. And Broadway is, of course, Broadway, and it's always going to be that extra layer and extra special. But at the same time, especially as performers, it's all the same caliber of performing. You know, you're just going out there to tell a story, and you're going to go and you're going to give it your all every night, and you're going to be performing with Broadway caliber performers as well. And you're going to be performing with Broadway caliber performers as well. So, yeah, I just wanted to, that was my kind of experience that I learned at the Jeff Awards. But I kind of wanted to share that all with you this week as I was thinking about it. And it kind of came into my head of just like, you know, I feel like this needs to be shared because I had that like awakening almost again. So I was like, I want to share that with all the listeners who are listening today or this week or whenever you're listening to it. So yeah, there you have it. That's episode 67 of Take a Bow. Once again, I'm Eli Tokash, and I hope to see you all next week because we have a really fun episode next week, and it may be a producer. So I'm excited because we haven't had a producer on it. I don't know. We're trying to figure it all out now. Anyways, it's going to be a very exciting guest no matter what. And I hope you come back and rejoin us for next week's episode and listen to some old episodes with your favorite Broadway stars. So thank you so much for listening, and I hope to see you all next week. Bye, everyone. Have a great week. For this episode's Curtain Call, I would like to recognize a few people who also deserve to take a bow. This podcast would not be possible without the help from Dory Berenstein, Brittany Bigelow, Katie Rosen, Alan Seals, and the team at the Broadway Podcast Network. Next in line to take a bow is Tessie Tokash, who edits the audio and all the visuals for this podcast. A special thanks to patrons Brian Thompson, Pat McNamara, the listeners at PCC, as well as all of the other patrons for their continued support. If you're interested in becoming a patron, go to patreon.com/TAB. And if you enjoyed this week's episode, don't forget to subscribe on the platform that you're currently listening to this on. Also, feel free to give us a follow on Instagram at Take a Bow Podcast. Take a Bow's logo is designed by Giselle Bustos, and the music is by Nikki Torsha and Cormac Collinon. Bye, everyone. Hope to see you next week.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah, not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.